Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Griese! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good afternoon again. This is Coach Chuck Griese, and it's another week of American Tennis. And each week at noon on Wednesdays, you can listen to American Tennis on the UR Tennis Network. You can go to UR Tennis Network also on Mondays and listen to Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces program at noon. And also 2 hours from right now, Jason Haynes has his College Connection program interviewing college coaches from around the country. I want to also say that J.P. Weber, every Tuesday at noon, has the We Coach Tennis program and the We Coach Tennis blog is also up with over 2,000 people, I think, now on their Facebook, which is great. And if you're a college tennis coach or a resort coach or a club pro or a high-performance coach or any type of a person that coaches tennis, you could be a parent who's coaching tennis, look at the We Coach Tennis website. It's quite a good one for the discussion of a lot of ideas. But this is the American Tennis Program, and each week we talk about American tennis and what's going on with American tennis and a different perspective from the standpoint of college tennis some weeks, 10 and under program, USTA, ITA, different things about what's going on in American tennis. So we try to keep you up with everything. And if you want to call in, you call area code 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853, and you can talk to me or ask the guest questions today. We always remind you that you have a duty to stand up and to speak out about those things that you have an issue with. Again, don't just be somebody that operates on the surface, do cliches and facts, and then sort of run and hide from the real issues. Stand up and speak out. Give opinions, feelings, needs, those things that are much deeper. We just ask you to stay professional, address issues, not people, and nobody can find fault with that. Edmund Burke says that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good people to do nothing. All of us have not just our right as American citizens with our First Amendment, but we also have a duty to say what needs to be said. We need to right the ship when it's capsizing, and we need to plug those holes, but we also need to applaud the good things that are happening in tennis in America. So listen, folks, every week I'm on at noon, and I usually address different issues. Lately, we've been talking a lot about the college tennis situation and the doggone it, the abbreviated stuff that is they're trying to push down our throats. And there's no other better way to say it than they're trying to jam it down our throats, the ITA, and they're trying to force abbreviated systems into our collegiate system. And I always say, well, why in the world don't they go to the players first instead of just saying, hey, we know what's best for you. Hey, wait a minute, college tennis isn't as popular as it needs to be. Let's go to, and just change this thing. They need to go to the players, but they know that they had an 85% disapproval rating with the no-ad scoring and the things that they were trying to do with the entertainment format, as we're calling that no-ad. Just call that the entertainment format or the quick-fix format, if you want to. That's what we've been calling it. We call traditional scoring the education format, folks. Call it the education or the player development format because that's the one that does the most good for youngsters. That's where the learning takes place. We've been on that, and that's about my little soapbox for that today. I do want to tell you, though, that you need to stay front and center with your opinions on this because as recruiting season is winding down, this is going to heat up again, and we are fighting for the honor of our sport more than just, hey, let's get more people to watch college tennis. I don't think people are going to run down from different places on campus and say, let's run on down here and watch this exciting format that is it's so good. We're going to watch this no ad. I don't think that's going to happen. That's not what it is. It's the time of the year we play, and it's basically the time of the day that we play, and it's just our own fault if we're not getting people out to watch. We need to ask people and promote one by one by one to get people out. And it drives me crazy a lot about why people are saying, oh, well, the excitement is the reason we do this. Well, it's not excitement that we need to be trying to seek out with tennis. We need to be seeking out with first youngsters the learning. And if you want to look at excitement, every one of us knows that excitement blows away pretty quickly. The drama of the sport and the thrill of what it teaches you, the endurance of the mind, the endurance of the heart, the endurance of the body, and that's why we learn to respect the sport of tennis. We want it to be something much bigger and much better than just excitement and something that blows away quickly. So. I've got a good guest with us today. This is Coach Bill Simpson. I want to talk here a little bit. I want to go in a little bit different direction. Coach Simpson has just been hired as the new head coach at Coker College in South Carolina. It's a D2 program in South Carolina. And I've got him here on the show, and I want to let him talk a lot about his whole mental framework about getting into college and how he looks at college. Now, Coach Simpson has got hired at the tender age of, am I right, at 28?
28 in a month.
Yes, 27 they hired. Oh, come on,
yes,
are you kidding me?
Yes, sir.
They hired Coach Simpson at 27 years old. I know I was going to say, what are they thinking? But no, I know what they were thinking. They've got a great... A person who's 27 biologically, but really mentally he's 35 or 38 years old with all that he's been through in tennis. And if Coker people are listening, you just got a great one. And you are very, very fortunate to have him. But, Coach, I mean, I'll give a little bit about your background here. 28 years old, you graduated from Coker. But you also have been a teaching pro at Smith Stearns Academy down there in Hilton Head as well. And you've been teaching tennis probably for the last 8 or 9 years of your life. You've been around tennis your whole life. Your father was a great coach, a great player. You know, and you've been able to work with your father a lot, and you got just really good roots in the game. But, you know, look, you could have been working down there at Hilton Head, and you could have been raking in the money, and you could have had a big career at basically doing either you could have done resort tennis, country club tennis, or academy tennis. And why get into college coaching, Coach?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak with you. It's always an honor to be able to speak with you about this game that we're both so passionate about. And to get to your answer, you know, I have worked at academy down in Hilton Head. I've also worked in a country club and briefly at a resort. And you know, there's a lot of different, you know, venues and opportunities to work in this and to work in this game, and all of them are crucial for, you know, for American tennis. And what I've found out is that I enjoy the maturing process that goes on in college tennis. I know that, you know, for academies and country clubs, you know, there's the developmental process that begins at the early age, and you know, by the time these players get into college, you know, they've developed their skills. Now it's just maturing their mind and you know, and fine tuning some of their skills. And you know, that's for me, that's one of my favorite parts about coaching. You know, in as far as practice goes, you know, it's definitely a completely different element that isn't touched on as much in the younger years while they're still working on their skills. Also, it's competition. You know, I'm a very competitive person, and to be able to take the team and to compete with the team is phenomenal. And I'm just I'm ecstatic that I'm able to do this after my 4 years of college, to still be able to go out there and, you know, although I'm not hitting the balls, I'm still competing. I'm playing every point with the guys, and so that's my reasoning behind it. But it's one of those things, and like I said, all aspects I think are crucial. You know, it's the developmental aspect. It's all of that. But for me, my passion lies in the maturing process of these young men and young women that are currently in college. It's growing mentally, it's growing physically. I think by 18 to 21, 22, you know, there's a huge leap in the mentality of these tennis players, and it's fun to be a part of that process.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, you know, college coaching is so much more than just hitting balls and trying to win matches. I mean, people from the outside look at it and just say, wow, that must be the best job going. It's a lot more, right? I mean,
oh yeah, there's a lot more as far as behind the scenes goes. But yeah, I mean, it's developing these. You know, they start out as high schoolers, start out as boys and girls, and by the time, hopefully, by the time we're done with them, they're young men and young women ready to hit the world running. So
you're going to be the director of tennis. You're coaching both the men and the women at Coker.
Yes, sir. That's right.
Whoa. Okay. All right. We could spend a whole show on this one. I see where it's heating up to, and I'm not going to pin you down on this one, but just a couple things there. I mean, is this the way most D2 programs are going? They're doing the men and the women together sometimes, or how do you do this? Do you run one practice on one side, one on another? I remember I watched Coach John Peterson, who's the master of college coaching, really, and he was at Tyler Junior College, and I remember watching a few of his practices, and he was masterful. He had the girls on one side and the guys on the other, and then he'd bring them together for a few things, talk to them, and then put them back out. You had a few things, but for the most part, he practiced them separately but together. What's the deal there, Coach? What are you going to have to do?
Well, yeah, to answer your first question, I would say the majority of Division II coaches coach both the men's and the women's team. And that's becoming, I guess, increasingly the norm. But what I would do personally is I'm going to split the practices. So we'll have, you know, the men practice first, the women practice first, and then have a conditioning where we'll do somewhat of a joint conditioning, maybe have some different stuff, but that would be pretty much together, and then the other team would practice after that. So I'm going to definitely split them up. I think that and it really depends on the people, and, you know, as I haven't started my first day, so I can't attest to their levels or their what they need as teams, but I know that usually there is a difference in what, you know, a men's tennis team and a women's tennis team need, and so I'm going to act accordingly and keep them separate, so that way their team practice definitely helps them out as much as possible.
Yeah, I would think, I mean, there are similarities. I mean, I know I've run camps for years, and I always broke the kids down on ability level. I never did it by boys here, girls there, or something. When they're younger, it's easier. I mean, the girls, I don't think anybody out there would disagree, but the girls out there are ahead of the boys probably until they're, you know, 9, 10, right in there, 11. And then the boys hit their, you know, puberty stretch there, and then they'll gain more strength and things, and they'll move ahead, but pretty much the girls then hit a big growth spurt. Tell me if I'm wrong now, Coach, but they'll grow very rapidly with their games and sort of peak. They say, you know, 16, 17 in there, they start physically hitting their games down. But boys sort of just take a lot longer to sort of I mean, I've seen players on the guy's side at, you know, 22, 23, 24 before they sort of just really get it together with their games. Any quick thoughts there?
No, yeah, I mean, that's absolutely right. It's definitely you see, you know, the girl on the girl's side, it's definitely around 16 to 17 where they do, I think, mature physically to about where they're going to be. You'll see maybe one or two late bloomers at 18, but that's about it. And with on the men's side, it's they start maturing around 18 and go through about 22. So as far as full maturity, so there is definitely a difference, and that's why as I as head coach will be splitting that up, because there's difference, and I wouldn't do it on skill level because it is a team atmosphere, so I want to keep the teams together, and I think that's...
Yeah, you've got to have a team camaraderie, but at the same time, with the skill sets, you've got to... I've always looked at it like if you have 10 players on the team, you've got 10 teams to coach. And each each one of those teams, you might have Joe here that's playing, and, you know, his own team members are his forehand, his backhand, his serve, his volleys, and different things. But it's really complex if you want to do a good job. You cannot – one size does not fit all, for sure. Even though there's stuff you do as a coach where one size fit all, you might have the same running sometimes, and you might have some of the same workouts. But, boy, it's a complex sport to coach. So you sure got your hands – full, you know, Coach. I mean, it's you better start taking a diary or a journal, and you write a book about this, because from day one, you know, this is going to be a deep, deep pool that you're diving into.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward for the to the challenge and the opportunity. So
yeah, well, I tell you, I think you're the right man for the job. I've watched you work, and I've been privileged enough to have Coach Bill here at the Citadel as an assistant coach this last year, and it's the greatest thing in the world to see the people that come work for you. They move on and become coaches themselves. And recently, a good friend of mine says you have a great coaching fraternity out there of not just people who you've coached against, but those you've worked with and players you've brought through. And so many of your players, he told me, have stayed in the coaching ranks. And that was a great, great compliment. And I'm very, very proud of Coach Bill Simpson. I want to talk about D2. I want to talk about D2. A lot of people don't know out there the difference between D1, D2, D3, and AIA, junior college, but those are five different divisions, and we have men and women. So we've got 10 different arenas. Coach, correct?
Yes.
And talk a little bit what's off the top of your head about D2. Let's go strength, first of all. I mean, if you had to say what are the strengths if for a youngster getting to D2, what would you say the strengths are?
Well, you know, with D2, they as far as just a student, not so much a student athlete, as far as a student goes, they do have a lot of academic scholarships, more so than D1, maybe not as much as D3, but there is the academic scholarship aspect of it, which is great. And
well,
I think,
explain now. D1 just has men have 4.5 and women have 8.
Right. Well, that's for athletic scholarships. But there's a lot of academic programs in place to get academic money, much like Division III. They just don't have as many. So a student like me, who is a student athlete, I received a percentage of my scholarship was athletic, but then also a percentage of it was academic. Because I maintained a good GPA and had a good SAT score, I received more money from academics than I actually did from athletics, because our athletics don't get as many scholarships, depending on the school being fully funded or not, as Division I. So you get that package deal type of scenario where you can put academics with athletics together into one full scholarship.
Which you cannot in D1, I would tell the people. In D1, it's either or. And if you have any athletic aid at all in D1, every bit of financial aid that comes to a person through the academic side counts against you. And that's just one of those rules, of bureaucratical rules that I guess it's for other sports, but I just never made much sense in tennis because we have so many good students in tennis. But go ahead again now with this. So that's part of that's a strength there in that the players can put different packages together to go to D2.
Right, and then you know, Division II schools are definitely for the most part much smaller, and so with the smaller school comes smaller classrooms. I know for a fact that every professor that I had will, you know, if I walk by them, they'll talk to me by name, ask me how my classes are going. They knew a lot about the, you know, the intimate part of my life that, you know, in a bigger college that you wouldn't receive. And their offices are always open because there's only, you know, 15 people in a class usually. So 15, I think the max you'll ever get is 20. But usually it's much smaller than that, especially for your major classes. So with the Division II comes with a smaller campus, you know, it's much more like a high school or something like that, where you have a lot more individual one-on-one attention.
And you know, it's not just number of students, but it's also the number of sports. I forget what it takes to be D1. I think you have to have 10 sports, 9 sports, 8. I forget how many it is. What is it with D2? Do you have fewer number of sports, correct? Usually don't have football either.
Yeah, usually that's the big one, is not having football. I know that D2 does have football, so I think that it also has to do with some other aspects. I think it's the size of the school, I think to an extent has something to do with that, but I'm not necessarily sure.
Right. And you know, in most of the time, as you said, that there's a strength that you didn't emphasize as much, but it really is. Last week we talked about small town tennis USA and how impacting it is. But when you have a D2 or a smaller school in a town of 20,000 or 30,000, I would think that makes a tremendous impact on the community, but also the community impacts the school. It goes both ways. The school impacts the community, but also the community impacts the school. Would you say?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the team that I played for, we had four guys freshman year that turned out that ended up were local. You know, high school guys that we all played together, and this was at Erskine College, which is where I first went. And, you know, we had two guys from Greenville, a couple guys from Lexington, and myself that all, you know, could have played Division I, wouldn't have made a big difference at the beginning, would have had to definitely work at it, but didn't have the scholarship opportunities that, you know, a Division I would be able to give us because of maybe level of play, but all had the passion to play. So going Division II, we had the chance with, you know, the scholarships and also the academic aid, you know, or athletic aid, excuse me, we were able to make an impact on a team and go to a great school that allowed us to really kind of put the whole thing together. So that was, I mean, those were local guys that, you know, maybe a couple of us couldn't have played Division I that, you know, that we'd have liked. But what it really comes down to is, you know, you get these kids that do have a passion for the sport, and what they want to do more than anything is to play. And with that passion, you know, the Division II gives them the avenue to pursue it.
Well, you have a lot of people. I bet people come out to your matches. You have pretty good crowds with small towns.
Oh yeah, you know, especially I think also with the small schools. With the small schools, you have a lot more camaraderie within the schools because, you know, you get to really know a lot more people. So become better, I guess, closer with a lot more people. Just in a small town, there's really not many places you can go and be lost in a crowd. So. You know, I think a tennis team can stand out a lot more in a small school than a tennis team can in a big school. So, you know, the schools actually tend to support more at the smaller level than they do at the bigger level. And then as far as the small town goes, that's absolutely right. You know, we've get business owners that, you know, like to play tennis and other type of individuals that want to come out because they've seen us around and they've supported us in the past, and because of that, you know, we tend to get a pretty large side, and especially if you have you know, young men and women that are on the team from that local area, then their circle of influence, their families and friends and everyone will support. So you do get to see typically, you will see more support from the community at the smaller school.
Right, and you bring that point up. If the kids are local, then people want to come out, and they will become a big part of that town. Now, I can't avoid asking this big question coming up, but it's very, very obvious that the D2 is the major arena where foreign students have come and found scholarships and places to study. Now, I want to preface this by saying it makes sense that our top 50 or 60 players in the United States are going to get scholarships to big D1 schools. But from 60 or 70 on down, it seems to me that our players 60, 70 on down are having to compete against 50 or 60 other countries in the world right now. And, you know, they're being our kids from about 60 to 70 on down are not being recruited. I mean, even a lot of them, I don't want to, this is not where I want to go with this conversation today, but it's very obvious. I talked to a pretty good player recently in the state of South Carolina, and he said pretty much he was giving up because all of the scholarships went to foreign students. And you know, I know, look, there's strengths and there's weaknesses. There's pluses and there's minuses. Sometimes an international student really just adds a lot of flavor to the team and brings a higher level of play. But we all know that for the most part, those international students do not give back to the school for years and years and years to come like a local youngster might. But at the same time, everybody wants to win. And so just I don't want to pin you down on this too much, Coach, but where are we going to go with this? Why aren't there more American youngsters playing at the D2 level? That would be the thing I'd want to ask you.
I think it basically boils down to a combination of things. First is the pressure's put on a Division II coach to win. It's much easier to recruit the number five guy in Spain than it is to try to get the number five guy from South Carolina, let's say. And that's simply because the number five guy from South Carolina might really want to go to a state school because that's where his buddies are going. He's going to try to walk on the team. And I've personally, as an assistant coach at a Division II level, have had guys on recruiting trips and basically told them, you will make this starting lineup and can play as high as number one doubles your freshman year, and they decided to walk onto a team, and that young man has actually never actually played.
And they never play. And I'll take it just a few minutes here from here. What happens? I've seen this over and over and over. You'll talk to that number five ranked player in the state and say, you can come and you can be a starter here. They say, no, I'm going to go to the big school. They go to the big school. They're riding the bench. And parents have a story to say, hey, my son's at this big school, but they're riding the bench. Oh, they don't get along with a coach. Or, hey, you know what, they're now investing in their academics. And, oh, yeah, well, the coach has a philosophy they don't like. And then the parents have the school. But there's something wrong with our society right now that our local kids are not embracing these opportunities at D2 schools or smaller schools. All the kids are shopping for a pedigree. Yesterday, Coach, I had a youngster that got passed over by a major, major school, and I told him, your problem is you're hunting for a pedigree, and here's the deal. You either make something in the place where you go, you bloom where you're planted, or you feel that the place has to make me. Now, we hope that it'd be a combination of the two, but there's something basically wrong with the way our youngsters and we as Americans are looking at the opportunities that are out there, because, Coach, there's plenty of opportunities in D2 schools to play, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Both men's and women's sides.
Yeah, and it's just so, folks, I mean, it's not all on the coaches. There's not just, but it basically, a coach will get 10 emails a day from international students and maybe one from a local kid or an American kid. What's the deal with all of us? Everybody's hunting for a pedigree. Everybody wants a label. Everybody wants something to put on their shirt that says, I'm a member of this club or this thing. That's not what it's about. It's about going and getting a good education and being able to pay for it at the end as well, not taking out 100 student loans and so on and so forth. Well, we're going to get off this subject. We're going to commercial, and we will be right back with American Tennis.
J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
Folks, this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and I want to remind you about our second annual holiday competition camp at the Citadel. Your child can come to the Citadel over before the Christmas break, the 20th, 21st of December, and learn how to compete at a higher level. Momentum management, shot selection drills, and different types of competition, and how to fall into his or her best patterns of play when they compete every day. Go to chuckcreasy.net, click on the camp, and see how to register for the competition camp coming up this December. Creasy, we're trying to make them in America and try to help in every way we can. We need you to stand up and to speak out and to try to help in any way that you can to try to help tennis grow in the United States of America. And college tennis is probably the most important link of the chain for player development. And Coach Bill Simpson, we're in trouble American tennis. I mean, I've seen the numbers recently, and we've got like only 21,000 youngsters that play competitive. That's 4 or 5 tournaments a year. High school tennis, even though we have a tremendous amount of numbers, we have 350,000 youngsters participating. It's a participation after school activity. Can I give it a rougher name than? I don't think so. I think it's an after school activity. It's not a sport anymore. We would have a lot more of those kids getting hooked on it and really becoming involved and becoming players. There's something we've got to change there with the with that arena. But in college, it's just not inspiring to see what is happening with the civil war we've got going on in the leadership. I just think they're in the wrong direction with the ITA and trying to jam and force feed this no-ad scoring and abbreviated scoring. It seems to me that if we dumb down and dilute what we're doing and trying to please a fan base, we sort of shoot ourselves in the foot. We're cutting off our nose to spite our face. We absolutely do not make the sport better. We don't make it more interesting. It just is going to – we're not going to get the mass amount of people just with some hocus-pocus show like that. Where are we headed, Coach? What do you see, I mean, as a young coach coming up?
You know, I mean, we're definitely in trouble as of right now. I think that that we do – there needs to be some unity, and I think it goes across the board with the USTA, also with, I mean, to the high schools. We need to get on the same page that way. Then with the ITA and the NCAA, I think we all need to learn to work together a little bit better. I think is going to definitely help us out. I know that last week on your show, you know, with some of the high school rules, we're not allowed to. You know, the high school coaches aren't allowed to put on tournaments, and then you know, they have such a bureaucracy there and tie coaches' hands, and then you have, you know, with the USTA and their point system and everything, it really hurts our local guys in small towns, and you know, I think that's I mean, that should be one of the biggest recruiting tools for us coaches.
It's top down management. I mean, what happens is top-down management cripples the ground troops. It's when you disempower the ground troops, you're going to have trouble. And it's the same thing with politics or government. Anytime you take away power of the people, you're in trouble. And the thing that bothers me the most, I call it, we got socialist tennis versus capitalist tennis. Tennis is a capitalist fundamental sport. It is one-on-one. It's the entrepreneur. You have, it's like music. Can you imagine music saying you got to play one certain way and everybody's got to start out this way if they're under 10 years old? Everybody's got to do the same thing. And wouldn't that be pathetic? What makes music beautiful is there's thousands of kinds of music, but they all are contributing the same. They're music. We need hundreds of different styles of tennis where kids come up as individuals, and we need to foster that somehow with fundamentals, but we need to foster that individual creativity. Now, as you said, we need to come together and work together. Well, that, I think that our bureaucracies, the USTA, the NCAA, the ITA, they would say, oh, we're trying to get everybody to work together, but nobody's listening to us. Well, that's the point. They're not listening to us because they're jamming it down our throats. Nobody wants to be force-fed. Power is implied. It does not have to be exhibited. You empower people under you. That's where power comes from. Why don't you guys get that? You know, why don't they understand that you must empower? The USTA needs to empower the sections and the states, not so much top-down management. You know, it's just the school systems need to be empowered from the ground levels up. Tennis needs to be empowered by that teaching pro that's out there, and he's got two courts in a little bitty town, and he comes up with a system that's great, and he gets two great players. And then what happens with those two great players is that they spawn more and more and more other people trying to play like them, and then pretty soon what you have, everybody's checking out, where did this greatness come from? So I don't know. Coach, I get very, very aggravated, okay, all right, let's ask you this. If you were in charge of our major bureaucracies, okay, USTA, okay, USTA, what would you do, first of all, Coach?
Oh, wow.
Hey, wait a minute. Switchboard is lighting up here, by the way. We must have hit a nerve. Okay, go ahead, Coach.
All right, well that's a big one. I think the first thing I would do is I'd get rid of the point system. That's my gut reaction. That's what I'd probably stick with. I think that with this point system, it's really narrowed the field a little bit as far as kids with opportunities and those kids without. And so I think the U.S. I mean that would be number one, is change the
point.
And
first of all, you know, what you've said is true, that if you got more money, you can go more places and chase the points. But that's the outside. That's only one of many things that is wrong with the point system. You know,
right.
The de-incentivization of people, kids and people, tournament directors and everything. It's awful that this point system is just – I'd put it like the Common Core deal in education, Coach, where we're de-incentivizing our teachers, and we're saying, hey, you're too dumb down there in this local school in so-and-so, South Carolina or Georgia. We're from Washington, D.C., telling you what. And the point system is what does this as well. So I had to throw that in. But
yeah, no, yeah. It reduces, I mean, it basically took away all rivalries in junior tennis. I think the rivalries, you know, it's the prestige of beating a certain player and having that win count, you know, exactly is what it was, is that win over that player, as opposed to basically, you know, just, oh, I got to the semis of this random tournament over three states away because nobody showed up, and, you know, that's how you do it. That's not fun, you know, and I think that's why a lot of the players, I mean, I know for a fact I took junior players around as a traveling coach, and these guys had calculated out exactly how many points they were going to win each round and what it would take to win to get their ranking up to a certain point so that they could get into the next level of tournament. But it's one of those things, these guys on their computers and their phones were doing nothing but looking up basically points, and that's all they really cared about. And you know, that's not passion for the game. That's not wanting to go out there and do battle against the next guy, the guy across the net. And that's where I think the passion for tennis has faded. And So that would be my number one, and I think that would be the biggest change that I would make to the USTA.
Dump the point system. Number one,
yeah.
Dump it. You hear us, USTA, dump it. You know, it's crushing incentives. It's crushing us.
Bring back the head-to-head.
Yeah.
So.
Go ahead.
You know, that's my biggest thing. I think I would also. I don't want to talk about it too much or give too much opinion, but the quick start tennis, I love the idea. I think I use it with my guys, and I've used it when I was in college tennis. It's a great learning tool. I think it's good for beginners. I think it's great for beginners to teach. I don't think that it's a one size fits all. If you're under this age, you have to do this, and if you're better than that, and as a 10-year-old, you're able to handle the yellow ball, you have to go play a 14-year-old. I don't know if that's necessarily the right approach. I think they can definitely make a beginner circuit that use those until they feel like they're able to move into the real thing. I think there's a lot of different things you can do with that because it is a great opportunity for young kids that are not very experienced or just starting out to be able to.
Like T-ball or something like that is okay for some kids. Some kids don't need to do the T-ball stuff in baseball.
That's right. I think that's I think that's probably.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge to just be able to have the choice between the two. And I mean, you know, since the beginning of USTA, you know, and all these kids and all of our players growing up and going through the system, you know, we have played with. I mean, I remember my first racket was my dad's racket, which was. One of the Wilson Pro staffs that Sanford used. I mean, that was my first racket playing with yellow balls, and that's something that it obviously it worked for me and it worked for all the kids in the past.
And if it works, it works, and that's the point we need to end. It's just like music, art or music, folks. Think about this: art. You would never. Every artist has a different style. You know, and every musician has a different style and different way of doing it. Tennis players and athletes are the same way. We don't even walk the same way, guys, out there. Do you understand? Why are you forcing us to do everything cookie cutter? And you know, I mean, and it's just, daggone, it's a good teaching tool. But really, I wanted to bring on this caller here in a second that would have a few comments. Looks like it's Coach Weber. And he really is outspoken about so many things. But the point being is that, you know what, since they put in this 10 and under thing, I want to see what the numbers have done. They're crashing. And now they would never say that it's because of 10 and under. Well, what are you going to think? What are we going to blame it on? Okay, we're going to blame it on some type of different sunrises and sunsets and the alignment of the planets. Or maybe it has something to do with disempowering individuals, you know, and it just has been a bad thing. I'm going to bring on, I think I have Coach J.P. Weber on the line there. Coach Weber, are you on the line?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Coach?
Fine. We have Coach Bill Simpson just has taken a head coaching job at Coker College. We've been talking about D2 tennis. You've been on a little bit of line, but we've shifted over here about. You heard his opinion on what he would do if he was in charge of USTA, first of all. He says he would dump the point system and then give freedom at the 10 and under level. Does that sound familiar to you with the 2,000 bloggers you have?
Congratulations to Coach Simpson. He's gotten quite an education, learning from his dad, learning from you. He's going now to start out on his own. And get it done as the head coach. Is that right? Is that what you said?
Head coach, men and women's director of tennis.
Head coach for women.
Very soon.
All right, that's an exciting way to go. Yes. I mean, when we look at the numbers, you're correct, Coach. At least some, I don't have the numbers on it. It's funny, I met yesterday with Todd Conley. Todd Conley, the guy that's here from Seattle. He's got something under wraps. It's big, coming out soon, hopefully. I keep telling him he needs to release it, but he keeps holding back. He's waiting and waiting. But I talked to him, and he said he joined the TIA, which is that Tennis Industry Association. it's actually owned by the USTA. So he said he paid about $2,500 for the membership, and he got access to all the stats that the USTA has on everything. And he said it was nothing. They don't have anything. They have nothing. And so he looked at it, and we talked about it from that standpoint. 10 and under tennis has gone down, but there's no record of it. They're not going to, like you said, Coach, admit to it.
They're not going to kill their own credibility after so many millions of dollars they put into the thing.
From a layman's standpoint, tournaments, I'm not seeing it. There are people that will tell you they see it. There are diehard supporters and believers of it. But I think there's maybe many more. You know, I think I told you, you could drive. We've got that loop around the circle or the highway around Atlanta, 285. You could drive around the whole of Atlanta, and maybe 1 out of 10 are using it. I think that exactly what you guys were speaking about earlier, if it's forced down your throat, all that does is cause people to dig their heels in. I mean, certain people, you tell them that they have to do a certain way, they're just going to go the opposite way, whether you thought it was a good thing or not.
Yeah,
so I think your approach to it is wrong. I agree with Coach Simpson. I like the idea of it. I think it's great. I've used it. I think that, you know, it's funny. Coach Creasy, you, Dagum, were using stuff like that.
91, 92, trying to get people to make more balls. We were doing tempo work with dead balls to try to get overload principles going. Because, look, we screwed up the game when we went to high-tech rackets because the ball striking started overcoming the movement on the court. The symmetry was lost. The dance steps were lost. We turned a beautiful...
You used to draw chalk lines. Do you remember that? You used to draw chalk lines. And each day, what was funny was, Coach, this is with your college players. I remember this. You changed the chalk line each day. As they got better at, you know, having better points, you backed the chalk line up. It was great. It was an adjustable 10 and under court. The first adjustable 10 and under court.
Yeah. Where they went all aboard, they forgot that we are the United States of America. We should not be. We'll take good ideas from anywhere, but we are. And guys out there, everybody, we are the number one entrepreneurial country in the world. We will never do socialist tennis. We will do capitalist tennis. We do capitalist sports. This is a capitalist country where the entrepreneur will be embraced, and good ideas must go into the free market of competition. And if they survive and surface, we will embrace them and say, wow, how did they do that? And, boy, can we get on board too. But the minute...
Hey, Coach.
Go ahead, Coach. I know
you got a little bit of time. I was just going to say, I'd love to do a shameless little plug here. We've got a high school coaches seminar coming up in December. And for your listeners out there, they can, if they sign up for this, they will become Total Tennis Training certified. It's a great opportunity for them. They can find out about it, if you don't mind me saying, Coach, the 12th, 13th, and 14th of December. They can find out about it on the web at tennisdynamics.net. We'd love to have some of them coming to sign up.
12th, 13th, and 14th of December, and I think we got to get it on chuckcreasy.net as well. And put
Chuck
it on
Creasy.
Your calendar,
well.
Folks. That'd be a great one. So, Coach Weber, thanks for your wisdom and thanks for all that you do to help hundreds and hundreds of people. But also the most important thing, you give a voice to over 2,000 coaches and tennis lovers of tennis out there with your site. So thank you. But Coach Simpson, we got a few minutes here. I want to get back to you. Great, great observations and insights there. All right, if you were in charge of the ITA, Coach, what would you do?
If I was in charge of the ITA, the first thing I would do, I mean, the ITA was created as a coaches association. And my so far limited experience, only past couple of years as a coach, I've come to realize that it is not that anymore. And there's very little avenue for the coach's voice to be heard and for them to be able to speak up. So the first thing that I would do, and this is the main thing, is – is to be able to give, to make it a coaches association once again, to give the power, I would say, back to the coaches. Let them decide what's best for college tennis. Allow, the college players to be a part of this process. I think that, just having one guy, be it me or anybody else, making the decision for college tennis is absurd. And, I'm not bigger than college tennis. I can't make those decisions. I think it has to be the guys at the ground actually putting in the hours, going to the matches, doing the practices. Those are the guys that need to have a voice. And it's much like you said with that USTA. It's just, we can't have a socialist type agenda here, and we have to let the people make the decisions for themselves on things like scoring changes or really anything. I mean, as far as tournaments go, I know that there's, for the ITA tournaments, there's so much of it gets bogged down, and we end up going to shortened formats because it wasn't the tournaments weren't set up properly. I mean, we have these guys that are down there actually at the tournaments that can see huge flaws with the way things are going, and those are the guys that voices need to be heard. But right now, that it's not.
And well, and the players, 85% of the players don't want to go away from what tennis really is. They don't want to do some hocus pocus thing, and whether it's the Bullwinkle system they tried to do last year, the abbreviated no ad, or all these things, all these hybrids, they want to know that they're a good tennis player. That's the big point. So that's a great point. It was a coaches association. It needs to get back being a coach association. It's not a bureaucracy with just people at the head ramrodding things down, and that's so wrong. And the NCAA, that's just, we can't even go there with the they really have their hands full with so many things, Coach. What's going on with the football, the conference realignments and everything, I think we're going to see a huge, huge, huge difference in the next few years with the way things are. But seems to me, I'll give you the last word here in a minute, but it seems like the whole philosophical battle in tennis is between the educational and entertainment aspect or ideologies. It's just so familiar. There's completely different ideologies, and it puts people in two camps. Some of those feel that skill sets is the most important thing, and it's more important than mindset and work ethic. And those that believe in the mindset and work ethic look at the educational side of things first, and it's a battle of ideologies. It's a battle of, why you do it. In the end, we honor the sport. We have to honor the sport if we want it to honor us. And but here's the one thing. We need to reach common ground. I on some things, but here's one thing I think that we're missing the boat, coaches. Tennis is an individual sport, and we need to look at team opportunities. Right now, we look at it like a team sport and look at individual opportunities. I think that hurts us quite a lot. And if we could agree on that it's an individual sport with team opportunities, that would solve the thing. We really have bummed that a little bit. Just quick comments there. I'll give you the last minute here, Coach. We've got about a minute and a half.
All right, Coach. Well, first, just thank you again for giving me the opportunity to be on this show. I think that's this is what we need in college tennis, and that is to be able to speak about what we need as coaches and with our great sport. And I think that we need more people to stand up and speak out. And I encourage any coach that's watching this, any player that's watching this, or any even parent that's watching this who are listening to this. Whoever has a passion for this needs to speak up and to talk. And with more people like Coach Creasy and Coach Webb, those are the people that are able to that are sharing their sharing the opinions and they're speaking up for the game. And I think that's where we need to go with this. And it's to be able to grow as a sport, we need those people that are actually out there on the court speaking up for a game. So,
well said, Coach. And we wish you such good luck in your new career. Congratulations.
Semperfied tattooed on his tombstone. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just made in America.
Process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little or nothing to do with a win or a loss. Put your heart out there all the time. Touch that person's heart who is around you. Inspire those young people to pick up our game and fall in love with it. We want to thank Coach Bill Simpson and wish him so much success and love, continued love of the sport. With his new job there at Coker College, they do not know how lucky they are. I can't to have this great man at their helm. God bless each and every one of you, and we will see you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the networks. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.